Good morning. Today is Thursday, May the 12th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County District Attorney, if everything's right, Maggie Fleming. Good morning, Maggie. Question for this morning, or why do we say that? Are you ready for it? Here we go. Jump the gun. Why do we say jump the gun?
Oh, I bet because originally with races, they fired off a starting pistol, and the idea would be, you know, sometimes people get eager and they step off the line too quick.
Ah, I see. This wasn't an avoidance thing then. the proper answer, or the complete answer, your circle of friends...
Oh, shoot, I thought it was good.
Well, hang on. You might get partials here. Your circle of friends probably includes at least one person prone to jump the gun any time plans are being made. Foot racing and other events that test speed and stamina are often launched by means of gunfire. A contestant who is tense and uptight, straining every muscle in order to get a fast start, is likely to jump into action at almost any sound or movement. But a racetrack with a pistol-wielding official isn't the only place where a premature start can be made. Almost any group activity, whether cooperative or competitive, can provide an opportunity for someone to jump the gun. I think that's almost 100%.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was going to say, if I was on Jeopardy, I think I would get the money on that one.
Yeah, I think so. And perhaps that really is reinforcing that you're a little bit off today.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, you maximize your opportunities when they present, right?
That's right.
Oh, boy. Hey, are any of the state races that are going on garnering your attention?
The Attorney General race, big time.
Positive, negative, concerns, hopes?
You know, I think you and I spoke with Anne-Marie on the radio when she was first. She was going to every county, you know, announcing her campaign. And that's Anne-Marie Schubert. She's the Sacramento County DA. She and I started in Contra Costa together in the 1980s. And she's just an outstanding prosecutor. She's running for state attorney general. And that's a really important race. It has, you know, an effect on every county. It has an effect on every citizen in California. So obviously having someone who's understands the role of a prosecutor, understands the duties and what you know, really is our focus and our responsibility, first and foremost, is a really important key race. And what I have seen, you know, sadly, over the last 20, 30 years, is it's become much more of a political, I mean, it's always been political, but I mean more of like a political appointment, political assignment type case or position. And that's obviously a big concern, because what we really need is someone who can do the job, who understands the job, and who will do it ethically.
The only contact we've had is from the Hochman campaign, and he's, you know, not pointing to your buddy, but pointing to the incumbent, indicating some interesting things. To be a state attorney general, you don't have to have had courtroom experience? Is that...
Right.
Do you need to be a lawyer?
You do need to be a lawyer, but you don't have to have ever been, you know, a trial attorney. You never have to have been a prosecutor. I mean, it's an interesting situation with, I think, a number of those types of jobs, where while there might be... you know, classifications, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to have the experience.
Okay, so as long as you have the sheepskin, so to speak.
Ooh, right.
That might be... No, that one's probably pretty self-evident, why we say that.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you have a sheepskin or do you have parchment?
I think I just have old onion skin out of a, you know, old-fashioned typewriter.
Oh, a what? A typewriter? What's that?
I didn't type it myself. I just want to make that clear. But I don't know if I ever told you the story, but my full name's Margaret Mary. And my first one was like Mary, M-E-R-R-Y. And I was like, wow, I've never seen that. So I called them and they said, okay. And then the next one was like M-E-R-I or something. So I called them again and I, you know, I'd gone to Santa Clara, which is a Catholic university.
Right, right.
And I said, okay, I'm going to make it really clear this time. Mary, okay? Well, like, we all know Mary.
Well,
and then I finally got one.
Perhaps with
my
your...
dad said,
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Brad. I'm sorry.
Oh, I see. Perhaps what they were thinking was Mother Mary.
Right.
That would have been a stunner to everybody, huh?
Right. So, but I finally got the real deal, and I have it somewhere in a closet. So.
Oh, now did you keep the others, or did you have to turn them back in?
You have to. That was the hilarious part. They said, "Well, you have to send it back." And I was like, "Well, who would ever use this, right?"
Right. That'd be cool to have one of the other ones above the real one, just to have
right.
confuse and befuddle any grandkids that may be coming down the pipeline, huh?
Exactly.
Oh, gee. Does the governor's race influence district attorneys very much, or how offices are run?
Well, obviously, there's a huge part of his impact as far as, or her impact, as they sort of set their priorities. One area that we see it is, you know, obviously with the budget and how they, you know, plan the future. Where we also see it, sadly, is with his veto power. There was a tremendous program that was brought about by the Yolo County DA earlier in 2021, or I should say the fall of 2021. It's very impressive, and he got it through both houses. I was so impressed. And it was a plan to require residential treatment for people with substance abuse issues who were committing crimes. And it was a pilot program, and then if they completed and did the aftercare, all their criminal cases would be dismissed, right? So it's a phenomenal idea. It's a way to address the substance abuse crisis. And the governor vetoed it. And I was really disappointed in that, because I do think that's a really short-sighted way to look at how to address this problem. You know, I think some people have this gut reaction of, oh, we can't force people into treatment. We can't require that. And the point is, this wasn't somebody that was being taken off the streets and forced into this.
We'll talk about forcing things when we come back. It's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time, it's 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, before the break, we were talking about some of the state challenges and the influence that the governor, whoever the governor is, has on the various district attorney offices throughout the state. Is there a connection there, or is the connection to the DA's offices through the attorney general to the governor?
So it is more through the attorney general. You know, they can decide what issues they want to address, whether or not they want to support specific appellate issues. So the idea is that we handle the case locally. If there's an issue with, you know, perhaps a procedure or something that's supposed to be addressed. So in other words, if someone wants to appeal, some of the appeals actually stay in our local courts. You know, if there's an issue with how a judge, you know, interpreted something like that, it might be handled at our level. But otherwise, all of our cases automatically go up to the Court of Appeals. And then the Attorney General steps in. And they have the right to say, no, we're not gonna oppose this appeal. And that's always been kind of rough, you know, because you sort of think, wow, we worked really hard to get this case to this point. Now you're saying we don't agree with this. We're going to let it go.
Yeah, never mind.
That was one issue. Yeah, that was one issue we saw. I think I've talked to you before about the change in the law with regards to the felony murder cases, you know, where four people commit a robbery and one of them shoots and kills, you know, the security guard at the bank, all four are potentially liable for murder because they entered into a very dangerous felony, you know, agreement. They conspired to commit a very, very dangerous felony, and so they recognize the risks, you know, and so that was the rule. Our legislators took that off the books, and so DAs throughout the state said, well, it's actually something that was, you know, in place and then voted on by the voters as part of another package that came up years ago. So we don't believe the legislators had the right to remove it. It should go back to the voters. So we all wrote briefs at our local level, and then here Judge Wilson agreed and said, yeah, I don't think they, you know, I'm going to go with this. And so then it went up to the Court of Appeals, and the AG said, no, we're not going to defend that. We agree with the legislators. So then I had to write the briefs at the appellate level because they were unwilling to take it on. And ultimately, you know, we were just all waiting to see what the Court of Appeals and ultimately maybe the California Supreme Court would decide. And they did decide that the legislators could, in fact, do this. And so now we're going through all those cases one by one and sadly, you know, undoing all those convictions.
Really? They made the determination that they can override the will of the voter?
Yeah. With regards to this one area, yes. So, yeah.
That's stunning.
We've been going through a lot of these, and it's tough. And obviously reaching out to victims of those cases and saying, we're really sorry, but, you know, we went through these trials, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, and now the laws changed, so all those people are being released. It's tough. And it's one of those things, too, that I think the public understands, right? It's that sort of notion that if someone kicks in your front door and you're one-on-one, you might fight the guy. But if four guys kick in your door and come in to rob you, you're in a very different position, and that's what's understood, and that's why the felony murder rule existed, because people in that setting are more likely to behave dangerously, and to a certain extent, you know, they'll encourage each other. You know, I mean, I had one of these where literally a couple of guys were shouting, you know, shoot him, shoot him. You know, well, of course someone's going to get killed in that.
And, so the Attorney General didn't understand that?
They didn't agree with our reasoning, and so they wouldn't. They would not take on the appeal. So all of us had to do it ourselves, which is a pretty significant burden.
Right. You know, particularly considering some of the size of a lot of the offices.
Right.
That's
and I relied heavily on other. You know, that's a nice thing is there are some counties where they have. You know, you have 100 lawyers, you might have 4 or 5 or 6 who just do. You know, all your legislative and all your briefs and all your law in motion, you know. So we had really outstanding prosecutors statewide who would, you know, sort of brief us, send us their briefs, help us stay updated, because that was, at that point in time, a full-time job. I mean, the law was changing. You know, different counties would say, hey, we got a ruling. And then everybody would upload it and try to see, you know, where does this put us now?
Yeah,
you know, and then, like I said, we're waiting for the Court of Appeals.
So with situations like that where the legislature jumps on top of law or makes the adjustments, do they work with the Attorney General's office and discuss things, or do they tend to operate in a vacuum and, you know, let the chips fall where they may attitude?
So it's a combination, Brian. So there's, you know, first of all, obviously, the AG, as well as, you know, the California District Attorneys Association has, you know, a committee made up of, again, these prosecutors who are in some of these bigger offices who are really in tune with changes in the law. And so they were at the table to argue why the law shouldn't change, you know. And in fact, long before this happened, and it was Anne-Marie Schubert who sort of led the charge, we had meetings to discuss, should we try to reduce who could fall within the felony murder? And the funny part is, for most of us, we were already doing that. So, for example, if you have the guy who's the getaway driver, you know, he's technically part of it. But when you have the guy who says, yeah, I was sitting outside, they said they were going to run in and, you know, steal something, but I didn't know anybody had a gun, we wouldn't charge him with felony murder.
Right. That's,
you know,
that's
it was like, okay,
just kind of logical in that approach. Yeah.
Exactly.
KINS, so hang on, slow down, okay. Girl. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by, playback.
And now,
live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I
keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time, it's 8:35. We have returned with more from Humboldt County's DA for 2022, Maggie Fleming. we'll just kind of leave that one. The supervisors took an action, what was it, a week ago, 10 days ago, something like that, where they kind of were slapping the wrist of the San Francisco DA about selling meth and open drug markets and all that kind of stuff, associated, I guess, particularly with the fentanyl, but not exclusively. Does anybody care about that kind of stuff, or does it have impact when one county reaches out to another and tells a department what they think they ought to be doing?
You know, that's a good question, Brian. I'm not sure how much influence that will or will not have on any decisions Chesa Boudin would make as the DA of SF. I do know, you know, our DTF officers have repeated to all of us the issues that they've seen, you know, the fact that they can literally, you know, because they can put trackers on cars with a search warrant, they can track the car, it goes straight down, comes straight back, and that they've spoken to officers there who basically have said, you know, part of the changes that they've seen, and frankly, San Francisco's been doing this for a long time, they just don't take a lot of the crimes very seriously, and that does have, you know, an impact, because obviously if there's a freedom to just have an open market, it allows that to sort of grow. So that's obviously a concern. I am really shocked by the powerfulness of fentanyl. I think, you know, you've reached out to us about doing PSAs about it, and we've done that because I really do think most people don't know how dangerous it is. And if there is any way for younger people to learn it, it's critical now they learn it, because too often, and this happens, I mean, we had parents come and present to us at our last conference, parents who had lost children. And the examples were kids who were, you know, kids who were sort of going along, you know, doing well in high school, doing well in college. And one dad talked about, you know, his kid thought they were taking a muscle relaxant. They were an athlete. And they borrowed a pill from somebody, which, of course, you should never, ever do. But I think if you're 17, 18, or 19, maybe you're not as aware of the danger of that. And they died, you know, and because it was laced with fentanyl. And it's just, you know, it's just sort of a shocking time that we're going through where this is happening. And it is just, it's a pandemic in itself. You know, it is destroying a huge number of lives because it's so dangerous.
Well, there was a news story, and I don't recall the time frame, whether it was collected in this year already or if it was last year, but enough fentanyl was gathered, you know, the illegal stuff, to kill every American.
Yeah.
In that short period of time. So the thing I don't understand is, while it can kill and does kill, how there are some that it doesn't kill. And I suspect that probably has to do with either the binding agents that are used or some of the chemicals within that. But is it as appreciated as a lethal drug as you think it ought to be?
No, it's not. And there will always be people who want to try things, who take things, you know. So we know that that exists. We know that there are people out there who specifically will try to buy it to use it, which is scary enough. But then the other issue that we see, obviously, are the people who are getting it and not knowing that it's been put into the drug they think they're taking. And that's the other part of the narrative that's really, you know, it's obviously devastating when people lose lose someone and they know they were not intentionally taking this drug, they didn't want this drug, but whatever they took was laced with it. And that, you know, there's parents groups that are forming. It reminds me sort of, you know, like Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Parents are forming. One dad, all he wanted was for all of us to put a warning so that in court, you know, and we're doing this now, but when we're in court with drug dealers, we tell them, you know, if you're selling or distributing drugs that have fentanyl and we learn of it and someone dies because of it, you can be charged with murder because they are doing it in order to increase the potency of the drug they sell, because that, you know, then basically makes their drug better than other drugs, and people are going to come back to them.
Oh, so it's a competitive advantage putting this stuff in there, so to speak.
It is. What people say is that I don't know if we would use the word increases, but it increases the effect of whatever drug you're taking. So it reminds me of probably, I don't know, 20 years ago, where we would have people who would sell one drug, but it would be laced with something else because they knew the person using it would get, you know, sort of an even bigger high. And then people would say, that guy's got the good stuff type of thing, not realizing that they were actually getting something that had other drugs in it.
Something totally different, Does Marin County... Yeah. Because of the proximity to San Francisco, do they have the same phenomenon going on, or is it Humboldt, Del Norte, Mendocino because we are so far away that individuals aren't driving into the city to pick it up, that it's people that are looking to push the product?
It's affecting all the other counties because everybody knows that is the marketplace. But, you know, it's true, too, I should say. I believe... We've had some cases come out of a location in Oakland as well, I think was the other location we had seen. So, but it's primarily San Francisco, and it's sort of known amongst the drug task force officers for the region that's a good point to go get it, and that's where people are going. So, you know, the mayor tried to do this, you know, no-fly zone sort of thing for that area. And they knew they had, I don't know, 20 or 21 names of sort of well-known drug dealers who were selling fentanyl. And so that was the mayor's goal, but I don't believe the mayor received any support from the DA, and that was the breakdown. So
isn't that stunning? And disappointing at the same time.
Right.
KINS, right. News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to several cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right. You can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable. So book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, the other district attorney offices and attorney decisions throughout the state, do they, obviously they impact other counties within their neighborhoods, but do they set precedent? Is it akin to case law, where it becomes kind of the standard practice based on what the big boys are doing?
So I think we've all recognized, you know, historically, we're all very unique. I mean, you know, obviously, like we have our own association of rural counties because our issues are very, very different than some of the other, you know, some of the urban counties, some of the really populated counties. So we all know we stand alone and represent our individual communities. DAs, though, share information, and particularly when we see trends, you know, whether it be the legislative trends or perhaps, you know, movements that we're seeing by various groups, we all start thinking about it and how are we going to address it and are we going to take action within our communities to, you know, either embrace it or find a way to deal with it in some other way. So we all do that. I mean, I, you know, early on, we all recognized the mental health crisis was going to have a profound effect on all of our communities. And trying to find ways to start addressing that was something we all, we have committees on it. We try to talk to our legislative representatives about it. You know, obviously finding funds for housing and resources for treatment is huge. And so, an urban area might have all that in place, but we don't, And so really working hard to sort of say, that's great, tell me how you're doing this, but now we have to find ways to do it in these small rural communities. So there's a lot of issues like that that we see and that we try to discuss and share. And then obviously there are issues where we just disagree. We say that works fine for your community, but that would never, ever work in mine.
Do you ever just stand up and say, no, wrong?
Well, the running joke, of course, was always in some of these meetings where we would be talking about, is anybody having their board of super? This was, back when we were first seeing legalization of cannabis, are your board of supers taking a position on the size of growth? So, and we'd always have a couple DAs who would raise their hand and go, I don't know what you're talking about. We don't have growth. It was like, yeah, good for you. things like that you just go, wow, really? This isn't at all in your is that possible? But, of course, that's true. So, there's a lot of issues that are more unique. Not everybody deals with cattle rustling. Some counties do. So
that would make sense, yeah.
Yes.
With some of those bigger issues, is there consensus that goes on? I would suspect that you guys have got a lobbying group just like everybody right. else has. Is there consensus right. or is there unanimity with most of the discussion? Mental health. I mean, I can't imagine a single county anywhere that doesn't have and isn't being touched right. with that as a challenge. Solutions may vary. Yeah. Suggestions may be different, but everybody's being touched by it. So do you guys have a unified front even with something that is as universal as that, or do you still have the nuances that some want to have incorporated into the discussion?
So I sit on the state board of directors. We have a number of elected officials, elected DAs on it, and then also deputy DAs are also on it. And there are times when we can, so for example, we'll be told this is going through the legislative system right now, do we want to take a position on it? And there are times when we can say, yes, we're going to vote on that. And then there have been times when we have said, this is something we need to put to the 58 elected DAs to vote on, because for some, this will be very, very controversial. And for some, this may actually go against, what they believe their community would want. So we're sort of aware of that. There are, like you say, universal issues where we can absolutely say we're gonna support this. We're gonna let all of our representatives know we're absolutely, in support of this. But then there are those issues where we say no, this isn't one that we as a smaller body of the CDAA can possibly weigh in on. We need to take a vote of 58.
Kind of like cattle rustling.
That's right.
Not everybody's going to want to weigh in on that one.
That's right.
Well, hopefully that there's more cattle rustling type of issues that are reflective of individual communities rather than something that is just endemic throughout the entire state, because everybody's right. playing that game. Well, you made it through. Congratulations. Right. You can go take a nap now. Or whatever else it takes to recharge your batteries. Thanks for coming by, Maggie.
Thank you, Brian. Have a good day.
All right. Get better. See everybody tomorrow.